Hello there, I'm Mark Fennell, and if you're tired of history podcasts that just drone on for hours and hours and hours and you just want something a bit different, well, check out No One Saw It Coming. Each week we hunt for the crucial moments, the inventions, the people, the stuff-ups even, that changed the world that you did not learn about at school. Like, did you know that the treadmill was actually invented as a torture device? Kind of tracks though, right? Listen now on Radio National and the ABC Listen app.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It's 1936, summer in Berlin, and the Olympics are in full swing. Yes, we're talking about those Nazi Olympics. Hitler's in power and keen to show the world the strength of the German people. Right now, we're on the athletics field. A 24-year-old Greek athlete begins his run-up towards a large pit of sand. It's the men's long jump, round one. The young man has three chances to jump beyond 7.15 metres to make it through to the next round. He's focused, fit, and strong. He runs to the mark, jumps, and lands in the sand. 7.05 metres. It's good, but not good enough. I mean, I'd be happy with a solid metre. Grigoris Lambrakis has two more attempts that day, but he can't jump that crucial 7.15 metre distance. His dreams of a gold medal are now officially over. And the man who does win the men's long jump? Well, that's Jesse Owens, the famous African-American athlete. It's one of the four gold medals Jesse Owens wins in Berlin. Owens is an incredible athlete, both physically and psychologically, a fact which reportedly angers the German Führer as he watches from the stands. Grigoris leaves the stadium, but he doesn't give up on his long jump dream. 2 years later, he jumps 7.37 metres, a Greek national record. A record that stands for more than 20 years. But this Greek national hero, an athlete, doctor, and peace activist, would live only a few years longer than his long jump record. 3 decades after competing in the Olympics, Grigoris Lambrakis is assassinated. 500,000 people take to the streets of Athens to mourn and protest his murder. It's not always the athletes who win gold medals who lead the most interesting and impactful lives. Hello, my friend. I'm Aslan Pahari, and this is Assassins, the show in which we tell the stories of history's most shocking assassinations. And today, Grigoris Lambrakis, a man who grew up in Greece, a country awash with physical reminders of its ancient past. A past full of invasions, conflicts, and the spilt blood of its soldiers. Grigoris saw those same battles play out in his lifetime, but he sought peace and was killed for it, taken out by a pair of far-right assassins. But why would anyone want to assassinate a champion Greek athlete? If you drive 2 hours west of Athens today, you reach the region of Arcadia. Full of rolling hills, olive groves, goats clambering about, and small farmhouses. For centuries, the word Arcadia has been used to describe a place of natural beauty and peace. But in 1912, Grigoris Lambrakis is born in this original Arcadia, and he will devote himself to the Arcadian idea of a peaceful life. In his early years, Grigoris is poor, in the way many Greek villagers were back then. But he's young, smart, and idealistic, and he's an Olympian. When World War II arrives in Greece, it sends Grigoris on a very different path. It's 1941. 5 years after Lambrakis competed in the Berlin Olympics, the Germans occupy his country. The main Axis powers, Germany, Italy, and Japan, decide it's strategically important to take control of Greece. A year earlier, the Italian fascists invaded the country, but the Greek forces managed to push them back. The Nazis, however, are a different prospect. Their invasion is swift and successful, and the occupation begins. Grigoris, our peace-loving athlete, sees what's happening and quietly joins the Greek resistance. He forms the Union of Greek Athletes and starts organizing events, raising money for food banks, and helping his fellow Greeks suffering under the occupation. Watching the fascists up close fuels his lifelong opposition to the far right and to the military. Right now, he's taking on the fascist threat coming from outside Greece. But soon, that threat will come from within Greece itself. By 1944, the Nazis have been defeated and begin withdrawing from Greece. The Greek nation celebrates, but their joy and excitement is short-lived. Post-war, there's a power vacuum and chaos, and a civil war breaks out. The country is turning into a Cold War battleground. American and British powers are terrified communism will take hold in this strategic location at the bottom of Europe. They send troops to battle Greece's leftist pro-communist forces, and thousands of civilians are killed, and many more die from hunger and disease. In 1949, the Greek National Army declares victory over the communist forces. Lambrakis isn't a communist himself, but he identifies with the left and is disturbed by what he sees. Over the next decade, the big institutions in Greece, the government, the military, and the police, are all heading to the right. Lambrakis does what he can within the limits of his non-violence belief system. He becomes a doctor and sets up a free medical clinic for women who can't afford medical care. War makes him even more of a pacifist. With the superpowers conducting proxy wars and a nuclear arms race, he shifts his focus to nuclear disarmament. He helps build a large anti-military peace movement, and eventually, he runs for parliament as an independent candidate under the United Democratic Left Group. And in 1961, he becomes a member of parliament. As his popularity grows, so too does the threat he poses to far-right forces in Greece. It's April the 21st, 1963, 2 months before Grigoris' assassination, the day of the first ever marathon peace march in Greece, an event Grigoris has organized. This peace march isn't just the length of a traditional marathon. It's taking place along the original marathon route. There's a lot of things the ancient Greeks invented, and the marathon is one of them. It's 490 BC, and after a difficult battle, the Athenian city-state has just defeated the Persians. They call for a messenger to run the news of victory back to Athens, but Athens is a long way from the battleground at Marathon, just over 40 kilometers. The messenger Pheidippides runs without stopping, arriving exhausted. He's said to have shouted, "We have victory!" And then he collapses and dies. Historians disagree about whether this story is true or if it's a mishmash of real events. Pheidippides does seem to have been an actual messenger in ancient Greece, but it's actually a famous Robert Browning poem from the 19th century that first tells the story as we're telling it now. That spring day in 1963, the Marathon Peace March organized by Lambrakis follows in the original ancient marathon route. The government tried to ban it, the police tried to stop it, and many protesters are arrested. In fact, for a lot of the journey, the only person marching is Grigoris himself. All those years of Olympic-level training give him the psychological grit to keep going. His status as a member of parliament protects him from the police, but they're not a group he can trust. He arrives in Athens tired and proud. But only a month later, Grigoris Lambrakis will be assassinated. The scene of the crime is Thessaloniki, the second biggest city in Greece. The leftist Greek MP, Grigoris Lambrakis, has just finished speaking to a crowd at a large anti-nuclear demonstration. The area has been cordoned off by over 100 police, and yet, somehow, a small vehicle breaks through and starts in the direction of Lambrakis. It's a Greek-made three-wheeler pickup truck. It looks kind of like a tiny truck dropped onto a motor scooter. In the vehicle are two men, far-right extremists described by many as zealots. Bystanders are confused by what's happening. How did a vehicle get past the police? And why aren't the police doing anything? The vehicle approaches Grigoris somewhat slowly. It's almost a comic scene. One of the men holds up a large club, and as the vehicle passes, he swings hard, hitting Grigoris directly in the head. Grigoris crumples to the ground. A witness, later nicknamed Tiger, sees it all happen. He races to help stop the assailants getting away and jumps onto the little truck. The crowd of bystanders see it all happen and yell to the police to do something. The police are slow to act, but with so many people watching them, they eventually have to arrest the pair. Grigoris is rushed to the hospital in Thessaloniki with a serious head injury. A Greek chorus of friends gather at his bedside, including his wife Daphne, the famous Greek musician Mikis Theodorakis, and the poet Yanis Ritsos. Lambrakis holds on for 5 days, but then dies on May 27th, 1963. A lot of what Lambrakis has spent his life trying to prevent comes true after his assassination. Increasing political violence, government dictatorship, unchecked police and military power. In the aftermath of his assassination, a group of lawyers and judges begin investigating. They delve into the alleged links between the far-right assassins, the Greek police, and people high up in the government and the military. But then something big happens in Greece. A group of right-wing military colonels launch a coup in 1967. They're successful and hold on to power for the next 7 years. Many of the key people investigating the death of Lambrakis lose their jobs. The central figure attempting to prosecute those behind the killing is Christos Tsatsitakis. The military dictatorship puts him in prison. And even more damning, one of the first things the colonels do when they seize power is pardon and release the two assassins. But something else happens after the death of Grigoris Lambrakis. Graffiti begins to appear on walls all over Athens. And then, other parts of Greece. A giant letter Z, because in Greek, Z can also mean he lives. So a resistance is growing, and many continue Grigoris' work. His opposition to the arms trade, to nuclear weapons, to all forms of war and political violence. A group even forms in Australia in the early 1960s, thanks to a large and passionate diaspora. It's called the Greek Democratic Youth of Australia. Later still, in 1985, once the colonels and their dictatorship are long gone from Greece, the prosecutor, Christos Tsatsitakis, is back. He was jailed for trying to expose the links between the two assassins and powerful institutions in Greece. In March 1985, he becomes the country's president. Every November, The Athens Classic Marathon retraces the steps taken by the fabled ancient messenger from the town of Marathon all the way to Athens. Since the 1980s, the race has been formally dedicated to the life of our man, Grigoris Lambrakis. The 42-kilometre race begins amidst dry rolling hills and the impossibly blue Aegean Sea. Along the marathon route, the scenery becomes more modern, with main roads and traffic and a lot of concrete. But at the beginning, when the starter gun fires and people are still fresh and full of energy, the runners will see a large bronze statue. It's of Nike, the winged Greek goddess of victory, sending them on their journey. In a country full of ancient statues, this one doesn't attract crowds of tourists, but there she is, promising victory if you're willing to go the distance. Assassins is hosted by me, Aslan Pahari. Hannah Jose is the producer. Sound by Tegan Nichols. Kyla Slaven is the supervising producer. Executive producers are Joel Werner, Eric George, and Jessica Radburn. As well as listening to Assassins, you can watch full episodes of the show on YouTube and Spotify. Those videos are shot and edited by Tejas Bhatt. If there's an assassination you think we should cover on the show, please email us, assassins@abc.net.au. I hope to hear from you soon, my friend.